Now, if any of the men are suffering from sore ribs, from elbows during that last session, I would tell you, this is your chance to get back, but that'd be a very unloving thing to do, to react that way. It is interesting because I've got a cartoon in my office that is a guy going to talk to his preacher, and he said, "I'm here to confess my neighbor's faults." It's very easy for me to see the shortcomings in my wife. Not always so easy for me to see the shortcomings in me. Jesus talks about that. You know, we really do walk around sometimes with that big plank in our own eye, and yet we're working on the specks on somebody else. You can't, wives, as in that last session as we talked, no matter what you do, you can't change your husband's or make him into what we talked about in that last session. He can. He can become the loving husband that God wants him to become if that's what he chooses to do and that's the effort he puts forth. But you can't make him into that any more than the husbands can make their wives into what we're going to talk about in this session. It becomes important that each of us understand what God is asking me to do is to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm the only person that can change me. When I have sessions with people individually, occasionally, and I'm sure Joe has had do this, it's not that we welcome it and want to do counseling types of things, but you do get an opportunity sometimes to sit down with couples or families and talk about those kind of things. And you just find out it's so easy for somebody to focus on the other person when you're trying to get them to focus on themselves. That's the only person you can change is you, and that's what we need to do with any of the information that we get this weekend. And so as we talk about husbands, and what wives need to do on behalf of husbands, we're going to see that it's a little bit different. Wives don't normally think in those kind of terms as far as what does she want anyway, like the husbands do. Wives are thinking, what now, what does he need? You know, what does he need now? One of the words that wives use to describe husbands is needy. You know, and one of the examples almost always that's used to describe that is the difference in the way men and women react to sickness. I mean, most wives will just tell you, you know, the husband, it seems to be much more needy. You know, the wife continues to have to do all that she's having to do. The husband lays there, you know, "Oh, can you bring me an aspirin? Can you bring me some water?" And she says, he's so needy. What is it that he needs now? And we're going to see that God has created him different commands. I mean, why is it that God doesn't tell the husbands to love their wives? Because they're not supposed to love their wives? The other way around. Why is it that God doesn't tell the wives to love their husbands? Are they not supposed to love their husbands? Should they? Should wives love their husbands? Yeah, it really is. They are built to do that anyway. That's ingrained in them because that's who they are. And it's because now you've got, God created men different. It isn't our most prevailing need. Just like we said, the reassurance. Not that I mind my wife telling me how much she loves me, but it doesn't make a huge impact on my life, the fact that every day she says, "I love you." The fact that I say that every day does. It makes a difference to her. It's not that I don't want her to love me. I do, but I understand that she does, and I accept that. I'm not looking for the love. But what is it that I do need? Why is it he gives different commands to the men and women? Because men and women have different needs. And so he's going to tell them to do different things based on the fact that that's what marriage is. Marriage is a complement. It is a fulfillment of the other person. It is seeking to complete that person. So what is it that I'm doing to complete that person? And so what we're going to find out about men is that women are going to see that they are driven to achieve simplicity, not security. Now, I don't mean, you know, unless some of the women think, I always said he was simple-minded. That I'm not saying he's simple-minded. I'm saying that he doesn't work with the same complexity of life. There's a book written by Bill and Pam Farrell. You ever seen any of those analogy books, marital analogy books, comparison books like men are from Mars, women are from Venus, you know, that kind of thing? I picked up one in Florida that said men are like clams, women are like crowbars. You know, there's a lot of different analogies out there, and you didn't even have to open that one up to understand where they were going to go with it, that's for sure. But I picked one up one time, a small book, and I thought, you know what, this just, I don't even know if this is worth reading or not. It was called Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. And I thought, what? The only reason I picked that one up, the crowbars and clams, I understood the point before you ever opened the book. Waffles and spaghetti, I thought, what is the point of this? You know, it had chapters like, do you want marinara on your waffle or syrup on your spaghetti? And I thought, you know, unless you're elf, syrup on the spaghetti, I guess, would be a good thing. But the, you know, I thought, what's the point of all of this? It had maybe the single best chapter on communication between men and women I've ever read. It was very interesting. That whole discussion about the work and the woman coming home from work, and all, that comes out of that book from Bill and Pam Farrell. Here's what he says, though. He said, you have to understand, men process information differently than women do. He said, men process information, and the reason is that men are like waffles. He said, if you look down at a waffle, it's a series of boxes. Men process information in boxes. Social scientists identify that and call it compartmentalizing. That's the way men process information. And so it's not that he is intentionally ignoring or something of that sort. If a man is in the TV box and the wife is trying to get his attention and she thinks he's in the TV box. You got to get him out of the TV box before you start having a conversation about something else. If he's in the reading box, if he's in the tinkering box out in the garage, if he's in the sports box or whatever it is, there's boxes for all information. And that's the way he processes. Why? Because God created him to be the leader, the one that is the provider within a family. And so men are driven towards success. And if I'm processing information in one box, I can deal with that and solve it. Men are very solution-oriented by the way that we're created. God made us that way. Women are like spaghetti, he says. It says, I challenge you to start with your eyes, pick out a noodle, one end of it, and follow that with your eyes to its other end. He says, you will seamlessly switch from noodle to noodle without ever realizing you did it. The reason, he says, because that's the way women process. Every thought, every idea is connected to every other thought and every other idea. That's why, to her, the Johnsons coming over, who happened to be the parents of Brittany's friend, absolutely was tied to the beginning of the conversation. All of that went together because it was all connected. It's what allows women to multitask better than men. Women are better multitaskers than men because they process information that way. Men would rather do one task at a time and do it. The hard thing for women to understand is men are simple enough that he has a box with nothing in it. He can go into a nothing box. You know, women say, what are you thinking about? And what does the husband say? He says, nothing. She thinks he's not telling the truth. So he's learned to try to jump into the box with the closest proximity and talk about something that she might talk about. But no, there's a nothing box. That's how he calms himself. It is just, there is nothing in the box. He's just using it as downtime. It isn't that he's trying to mislead you. He's processing, and it's the way he processes. His downtime is the same as his uptime. If he's in a box solving something, he gets into a box so that he can have the downtime, the relaxation. So he may go into that nothing box. It's a simplicity. And the reason that God gives us these different commands, he's saying women need to understand how men process. So if I'm going to do for my wife what she needs to have done, she needs to, in like manner, think about what does God say that I need. So look at what he tells the wives. It says the godly wife in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22, wives are to do what? I'm sorry, what? To submit to their husbands. Well, you know, that isn't just, it's not like God just thought, hey, here's a good idea. I'll just have the wives submit. Why is that he's telling them to submit? I understand he made the husband the head of the household. But he's telling the wife to submit because it is something that the husband needs in order to be the head of the household the way that it's supposed to be. He's telling her, you need to do this. And he can't submit her. She has to submit. That's a willful yielding of oneself. And so she needs to yield because that is what he needs in order to be the kind of godly husband and father that God expects him to be. But it isn't only the idea of submission, and we'll talk about that in a moment. I think it's interesting. When I first started teaching these lessons, I kind of operated under the idea that if you could just correct the men, that most marriages would go right. That, you know, there was this kind of mentality that thought men are falling down on their role more than women are falling down. And that may be because I'm a man, and so I was constantly examining myself. I no longer believe that and haven't for years. And I think even within the body of the Lord's people, that there is an equal issue of women fulfilling their role in the marriage as there are men. And for every man that doesn't love his wife the way that he should love his wife, there are women falling short of what God asked them to do as well. And let me explain to you how that is. That's not only in submission, because he also gives the wives another command when you get down to the end. Remember at the end he said, I'm talking about Christ and the church, but he says, nevertheless, and he repeats for the men, nevertheless, husbands love your wives, but he doesn't say, wives, submit to your husbands. What does he say? Nevertheless, husbands love your wives, but in verse 33, what does he say? wives? Respect your husbands. And I would tell you that that is exactly what men need and what they are driven to get, and what is absolutely fundamental is the idea of wives submitting, wives respecting. Here's where we wrestle with that. As you go back and you think about Ephesians 5, verses 25 and following, and the commands to the man to love his wife, we talked about sacrificial, we talked about nourishing and cherishing kind of love, the valuing kind of love. If you were going to pick one kind of, or one word to describe God's love for us or Christ's love for the church, what one word would you choose? I'm sorry, what? Sacrificial, but I think it's even beyond sacrificial, and he deals with that part specifically as an issue. Unconditional. Isn't that what we normally talk about? God's unconditional love. It isn't based on us, is it? We're told that in Romans, Paul wrote to those brethren, he said, while we were yet sinners. It wasn't when we got things right. While we were yet sinners, God gave his son for us. It wasn't based on us. It never was conditional. Love is unconditional. I am to love my wife regardless. Would you agree with that? God tells me, love my wife regardless. He tells us as Christians that's the way things work as well, isn't it? He says, you know what? Anybody can treat the people that treat them nice, nice. That's not what I'm asking you to do as Christians. I'm asking you to treat everybody the same way. Isn't that what he tells us? Even the person that spitefully uses you, even the person that lies about you or says cruel things to you, I should still show them a Christ-like attitude, shouldn't I? Even though they've got to deal with their problems, but I act the same way. Husbands, love your wives unconditionally, he says. But anytime we talk about respect, if I were to ask you to fill in the blank that says respect must be what? Earned. I would tell you that is absolutely unbiblical, I think, when it's talking about a husband-wife role. Does he say, wives, respect your husbands if he earns respect? Thinking in terms of unconditional respect just goes against the grain of the way we normally think. I can't respect somebody unconditionally. Yes, you can. God's not asking husbands, if your wife does something bad, let's suppose your wife is being cruel to you. Let's suppose she's withholding herself from you in the intimacy side of marriage. Does God say, you know what, you should love that action? He's not telling you to love what she's doing. He's saying for you to love her in spite of what she's doing. He says, wives, respect your husbands. It is because that is the role God has put him in. It is because he is the head of the household. And the same as men do things that they don't think are unloving, women do things that they don't think are disrespectful. But just the same as the wife views that as unloving, if I say something that's rude, or if I turn my back, or I just don't listen to something Judy says, she feels very unloved in that process. I'm not trying to be unloving, but she feels unloved. I can tell women it's the same way. Men feel disrespected with certain behaviors. I'm not saying you're trying to disrespect him, but the same as you're looking for love, he's looking for respect. And we need to understand that there are things that will help us to do that. When I was about 16, I grew up in a military family. I was one of those military brats. My dad was an officer in the military. And when I used to drive onto the Air Force base, I used to get a big kick out of it when I was 16, because as I'd be driving one of their cars and pull onto the base, there would be an airman it was an Air Force base, would be standing at the gate, you know, to either wave you through or stop you. And when I would get close enough for him to even see the car, really, he would snap to attention and snap a salute and hold that salute until I went by and then snap that salute off. I got a big kick out of that. I was 16. He didn't know me from Adam. But there was a sticker on that car that said, this car belongs to an officer. And he snapped to attention out of respect for that car. Now, I assure you, when I would snap that salute back to him, he didn't appreciate that the way that I would have thought he might appreciate that. You know, I mean, and I was trying to be just an obnoxious kid. And so but it didn't matter. He held that salute and he snapped that salute off. Why? Because he respected the fact that that was an officer's car. My action was not becoming of respect, but that wasn't the issue. Respect was due. I tell people, since I have been of voting age, there have been presidents that I have liked, presidents that I have disliked. I would say that's probably true of all of us. There are presidents I have liked a lot, precedents that I have disliked a lot. But I would tell you, I would hope this, that if the President of the United States, whether I liked him or not, came into the room where that I was, whether I liked him or not wouldn't make any difference. I would show respect to him because he was President of the United States. That's all it should take. You know, I'm just demonstrating that the office itself is deserving of this. And I think God is telling us that. Women, it's an unconditional respect because that is the role God has given him. That's where he's put him. And so how do we demonstrate that? I said men are more simple. We're going to answer three questions for men. And you're going to see, I think, that they're fairly simple. He's going to ask you these questions, and that will help you to understand whether or not you're demonstrating the kind of respect that he wants. One, he's going to ask you the question, is life with you going to be an expression of confidence? Am I expressing confidence in him is what God is asking you? Or are you demonstrating that? He wants to know, how are you demonstrating confidence to me? Some things to think about. Appreciate his desire to achieve, or you could even put work there. Demonstrate that to him. What are you telling him about his work? If the husband is trying to tell the wife how valuable she is and in the different ways that she's valuable, what is the wife saying to the husband? Think in these kind of terms. Man comes home and he says, honey, I lost my job. She says, that's okay, honey. We've got each other. Nothing else matters. That sounds like a very loving thing to say, doesn't it? But I can tell you, most husbands wouldn't view that the same way if that's the situation they were in. It does not matter cannot be the sentence that follows, I lost my job. Why? Just think about men and women. Here's the difference between them. Two men meet for the first time. What do you think is the most normal question for one of them to ask the other? What do you do for a living? Almost every time. What do you do for a living? When two women meet, you think that's the question they most ask? What is the most often asked question or area of question you think for women when they meet? Let me hear some. I heard different ones. Have any kids? What else did I hear? Are you married? What's your husband do? Do you work? I mean, there's different things, but you're going to find out overwhelmingly they're going to center around marriage, children, grandchildren. Why? Because they are relationship driven. Men are success driven. Women are relationship driven. So to ask a man, what do? Signifies something. Because we are tied to our work, what we do. And if I don't feel my wife appreciates what I do and the work that I put forth, I will feel very disrespected by that. And there are different ways that she can do that. When she says, it doesn't matter that you lost your job, I understand she wasn't trying to be disrespectful. I would hope any husband would be very understanding of a situation like that. I'm just saying men's minds think differently. It does matter that I lost my job. God asked me to provide for my family. How am I going to provide for my family? He's not denying that God will take care of him. It isn't a lack of faith. He may agree with her completely. It'll all be okay. We know it'll work out. That's not the issue at the moment for him. The issue at the moment is, I don't have work, and I'm supposed to be providing for this family. If I don't succeed in that, then I feel like a failure. I need your confidence in me in that. I had one couple that I was studying with, and she said, one of the worst things you could ever say. And I got to tell you, even though it was true probably, it was just horrific on the husband. They were talking about their finances, and they had cut their finances in many ways they could. He wasn't very educated. He had a job that didn't pay him a great deal of money, and they had multiple children. They were trying to make their ends meet. You know, a lot of families have been in that situation. They're sitting down. They're talking about what they're going to do. She said, well, we're all sitting there together. She said, you need to get a second job. Now, that probably was true. They were going to have to do something to come up with some more income because there wasn't really any other ways they could cut anything. I mean, they were cut to the bone pretty good. But I'm saying, as a man, how do you think he heard that? Honey, you need to get a second job. Girl, you're not doing enough. That's not what she meant. I understand that. That's not what she meant. But that's what he heard. You're not providing for our family. You're not, you know, now, is that correct? That isn't what she intended at all. But it's a something that shows him she doesn't have the confidence in me to do what I need to be able to do. Secondly, appreciate his desire to provide and protect. He wants to do that. When he wants to be the man, sometimes you have to let him be the man. Allow him to get into that protective mode. And so he's saying to the wives, you need to submit the way that the church does to Christ. You need to respect him the way the church does to Christ. The whole manner of that, just a completeness and a totalness, something that shows dependency on him. When the husband knows that the wife feels dependent, that doesn't mean she can't ever be independent. She needs to sometimes show him that she appreciates his lead and his protection and his provision in life. And so appreciate that desire to lead. You know, in Titus chapter 2, the concept of submission, that word in the Greek, hupotasso, which means to line up under, you know, it's a military term, has nothing to do with equality at all. That's what God says in other places. There's neither male nor female. When it comes to spiritual equality before God, we're all equally Christians. That's not the issue at all. The same as when he talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, he says that God is the head of Christ and Christ is the head of man, and man's the head of woman. And yet John 1:1 says that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. There's absolute equality, same Godhood between Jesus and the Father. They're both God. They don't both have the same role. And it's the same way in man and woman. He's saying, you've got to appreciate that God gave him a different role. You have to allow him to lead. Now, we're not talking about when he's making a decision that is against the will of God. Peter tells us we've got to obey God rather than man, if that's what it comes down to. But whether you agree with the decision or not isn't always the important thing. Submission isn't about agreement. Submission is about yielding. No submission is required when you're in agreement. You ever think about that? I mean, it may look like submission, but agreement doesn't require submission. If I agree that what you're doing is the right thing, then I'm going along with you. Why? Because I agree. A boy was asked by his father, given a layout of a plot of land. Told by his father, he says, this is how we're going to set the farm up. You need to build the house here. You need to build the barn over here. It says you need to build, we're going to build a corral over here, and you need to put the well here. And so he shows him the four different locations. And so the son goes to lay everything out, and he builds the house exactly where his father told him. He thought, man, that's so great. The barn's going to be close. We can get back and forth very easily. And he builds the barn exactly where his father told him. And he thought, great, you know, great pasture over here and flat land by the corral. And he's going to build the corral, and he built exactly where his father told him. He got to the well, and he thought, man, that's a long way to walk from the house to the well. I'm going to build the well closer to the house so that we don't have to walk so far. So he did. He built the well, dug the well closer to the house. And anytime I talk about that story, I talk about to our, especially our kids, the high schoolers, I say, how many times did the son obey the father? Gave him four things to do. How many times did the son obey the father? Three? I would say zero. He never obeyed his father. The son did what he thought was right. As long as his father said it and he agreed with it, he did it. As soon as he disagreed. You never know whether you're in submission or obedience, either one, until it comes into something that you don't agree with. That's the nature of marriage. You're not going to always agree with the husband, but I'm telling you, if you're not following his lead, he's going to feel very disrespected in that. That's the nature of that. And appreciate his desire to analyze and counsel. Man, I got to tell you, this is a battle that took me a long time to learn this one, man. When I used to come home from work, when Judy had three toddlers at home, when our oldest was 3 and a half, our youngest was an infant. So that was the total span between them. So you've got 3 and a half to infancy, three boys. I would come home from work and have to tell you, never understood what could possibly be so difficult about being at home all day with three kids. Then I didn't understand. You understand? I understand that much better now. But didn't then. And I would come home, and Judy would say something like, of course, normally it was, you know what your son did. They were only mine when they misbehaved. But when she would tell me something one of the boys did, my typical response would be almost always to say, you know what? Here's what you should have said. Here's what you should have done. But it took a while, but I finally learned she wasn't asking me to fix the problem. That wasn't the issue. She sometimes just wanted to vent and to talk. We understand that. And so, you know, I just learned, is two of the greatest words a man can ever learn. Just, and just listen to what she has to say. But I would tell you the other side of that equation is, the reason we do that as men is because we're solution-oriented. We're in the box. Because if a woman brings up a conversation, I can tell you, the first words the man hears, no matter what she says, the first words the man hears is, Houston, we have a problem. Because why would you bring up a conversation if you're not seeking to solve something? The men don't just talk just to talk. She's just trying to connect. She's trying to go through all that process. But the men think there's a problem. And so if that's the way we process information, she needs to let us analyze and counsel sometimes. Not always. Sometimes she just needs to start by saying, I'm not looking for a solution. I just need to vent a little bit. Because that'll put the man at ease. He just sits back. He thinks nobody's asking him to solve anything. But if you're presenting a man a problem, he thinks you're presenting it to be solved. That's the way God created us. And so sometimes you need to let him analyze and counsel, because that shows him that you respect his solutions. And so you think about that. So how do you demonstrate that to a man? How do I really show him that kind of respect? How many of you in here as wives give your husbands cards for different things, birthdays, anniversaries, things like that? Three women? That's it? Wow. All right, we need to work on that side too. Men don't like to keep cards, but they do like to get them. You know, we've been married 34 years. I've got four cards that I've got saved so far. Unfortunately, only one of them came from Judy. Three came from other people. So I don't keep cards, but I still like to get them. How do you sign a card, wives? You give your husband a card. How do you sign it? I'm sorry, what? I love you. Anybody else? Judy signs hers with all my love. You know, and so typically those are the kind of things we put at the end of a card. Have you ever thought about giving your card and said, with all my respect, and sign your name? Why would we not typically do that? Yes, sounds a little cold, doesn't it? Sounds a little cold. But he's looking for respect. So how do you do that? How do you tell him verbally that you do that? How important is it to maybe write him a note and tell him how much you express, or sit him down and tell him, say, you know what, I appreciate so much the effort you put in to leading this family and directing this family. I have so much respect for your choices that you make and the things that you do spiritually and the things that you do physically. He needs to hear that. He needs to have that kind of confidence vote. He needs to know that you're not missing it when he's trying to protect and he's trying to provide. When he analyzes and counsels sometimes, you need to take the solution and go back and thank him that he helped you to solve that, even though you may not have been looking for a solution. When you go back and say, wow, that, you know what? That really worked. That was a big plus. I appreciate that so much. He feels the confidence and the respect. That's why at work he likes it if his boss says to him, hey, job well done. That means something to the man. He appreciates that when the boss just congratulates him on something or tells somebody else, hey, did you see what Mark did on such and such project? That really worked out well. The man feels good about that. He needs to hear that from his wife as well. You praise his good decisions. You're gracious when he makes bad decisions. It doesn't mean that you don't still follow some things you do, but you're trying to show him, I want you to know I am absolutely confident in you being the leader of our home. If you build that, that's not to build up his ego so he gets a big head. You've got to help him feel that he is fulfilling his role. Because if I'm driven towards success, my biggest fear is what? Failure. And so that's what I'm battling. Whereas women are driven towards security, that loss of security. The number one problem in women, just as a general rule within marriage, according to James Dobson in his book, What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women, is the battles of self-esteem. That's why they're asking the questions. That we're in a society, especially if it's a wife that is a mother and a mother at home. I mean, are we not in a society that devalues that role completely? It acts as if that's a worthless choice in life, to become a mother at home to children. And so if that's what you're constantly being told, or we're in a society that bases everything off of beauty. And so if she's not the most beautiful woman in the world by the world standards, then she's not going to feel good. Husbands need to help her have the right esteem, to understand her value. She needs to help him feel respected. Secondly, is life with you going to be filled with admiration? Men look for compliments as well, generally about different things, but they're looking to be complimented, that they want to hear favorable things. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 24, says, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bone, but harsh words pierce like a sword. The things that you say, you know, that woman saying you need to get a second job is just piercing. We understand the nature of words. You know, when I don't know if you've seen that TV commercial where Abe Lincoln's on with his wife. You know, does this dress make me look fat? That's another one of those questions that, how do you, and, you know, he makes a mistake, you know, just a little. You know, if I was to ever say to my wife something that sounded like I didn't appreciate who she was or what, that would be piercing to her. I understand that. It's the same way with men. Words, it doesn't take much of a word. I mean, think about going to the doctor. You think words don't have an impact? Go to the doctor, wait for the doctor to come out with a lab report, and he says malignant, or he says benign. How different is our reaction to two, just a single word? Isn't that incredible? I mean, one word spoken here or one word spoken there, and it makes a huge difference. It's the same way in our lives. Careful with those words. Say the right things. We have the power in our tongue over life and death, according to Proverbs chapter 18. You know, so what we tell women is they need to flirt with men. Men like flirtation. That they like the woman to be that flirtatious with them, complimentary that way. If that wasn't true, I would ask you to explain one phrase in our language to me. You're the man. A group of guys can get together, one of them slaps the other one on the back and says, hey, you're the man. He said, no, you're the man. And they're back and forth, you're the man. But whoever leaves the room, having been declared the man, holds his head up high, and he feels good about that because he knows amongst his peers, he's the man, and they have determined that. I understand that, you know, the facetious nature of that, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of truth in that as well. He wants to feel admired. He wants to feel that complimentary statement. When she tells him what a great cook he is, or if he's grilling something out, you know, what a great job you did with that, or something he did at the house, or just to flirt with him, just for a woman to look over to her husband and wink at him. I know one wife that used to do that just drove her husband nuts because they'd be out in a group of people. You know, and she would just look at him when nobody else was looking, give him a little wink or a seductive look, and just say, you know what, I really want to be with you. You know, and I'm telling you, it just, for him, it was incredible. He's looking for admiration. He wants to have that relationship. There's always a flip side of that coin, you know, because there's always, admiration can go the wrong way, the same as any other compliment can. I can tell you after one Sunday, a preacher who will remain unnamed, but preacher says, he's in the back talking to everybody, and people are, you know, thanking him for the lesson, that kind of thing as it normally goes. One lady stops and says, I have to tell you, I truly think you are one of the great preachers I have ever heard in my entire life. Maybe one of the greatest preachers in our whole country. That's the comment to the preacher. I can tell you, very seldom does a preacher really need to hear that kind of comment. There's less benefit to that than you might think. But he was feeling pretty good about that. And on the way home, he's driving home, and he's kind of quiet and got even kind of a sly smile. And his wife asks what he's smiling about. And so he explains the whole situation to her. And then they drive a little bit more, and there's silence for about 15 minutes. And he's just smiling over there. And his wife says, what are you thinking about now? And he says, I've just been trying to think in my mind. I wonder how many great preachers there really are in this country. She says, one less than you think, I can assure you that. You got to be careful with what you do with it, for sure. But men do want to be admired. They like to be complimented. They like flirtation because it makes them feel, again, successful. She is looking to me as being something in her life that matters. As much as she wants to matter to him, he wants to matter to her as well, though it may be a different reasoning behind it. And then I can tell you, thirdly, and the question we generally least like to deal with, but he's going to ask it, is life with you going to be sexual? Now, we wrestle with this. I can tell you, at marriage retreats, we talk about this frequently, and we go through this, and the reason is because I didn't make my body with testosterone in it. God did. This isn't my creation, this is his. So whatever it is that he created good. We understand that. Whatever it is that he put in man by way of drive physically is good. You know, I had a woman after one retreat, she says, you know what, men are just, they're just dogs. That's all they think about is the intimacy side of that. And I'm saying, you're telling me that that's what God created? I mean, God made man with the drive. Why? Because it is very much who he is. And fulfillment of the drive that God put in man is very much a part of the side of respect of marriage. We don't normally think about it that way, but we'll talk about that for just a second. Think in terms of, I don't know if you've ever seen any polls, three most common sources of argument in marriage. Across the board, they remain the same three. Four through four following changes around. Generally, the top five stay about the same, but below three change around some. But the top three, though the order may reverse sometimes, are almost always the top three. Number four is in-laws, so I'll just take that one off the table for you. Number four is in-laws. You know, one man said, that's the perfect description of mixed emotions, watching your mother-in-law drive your new car off a cliff. I don't know what to think. No, really, you understand. You can't think that way. What do you think the top three are? Money. Money, always in the top three. Sex, and actually religion, not in the groups that were polled because they were religious groups. Children, those are the top three. Money, sex, and children. They may reverse around some, and a lot of things about the children, a lot of different discussions, but those are the three items of contention the most. The sexual or physical relationship in marriage is a microcosm of the marriage. You can count on that. If the physical intimacy side of the marriage is not going well, it will be a rare, if ever, occasion that the marriage is going well. It is a part of who we are. We view that differently, but God made us to view that differently. Men are extremely visual. We understand that, do we not, men? And so you read a statement like David. David committed adultery with Bathsheba. It says David was on the roof and he saw a woman naked. There is no man who has reached the state of manhood. There's no one male that has reached the state of manhood that doesn't understand the significance of just that statement alone. He saw a woman bathing. She was naked. Men are visual, whether they wanted to see it or not. Even if you give David the benefit of the doubt and say, you know what, I don't think David went up on the roof to see that. I think that was purely coincidental. What happened to David? The same thing that would happen to a lot of men. He saw a woman bathing naked and he gazed. He kept looking. Why? Because he wanted to? I don't know what his intent was to look. It doesn't tell us that, but it tells us he gazed. It is difficult to turn away from something that is very visually appealing. Who made me that way? God made me that way. How do I know that? In the Proverbs, you know what God said about my wife? In my relationship with my wife? God said, let her breast satisfy you. Think about that statement just alone. Should I not find that appealing, her physical body? Should I not find that appealing? Is it not God who says, you know what, Mark? Look at her body. Appreciate that. Appreciate that. Don't appreciate other women, but appreciate your wife. How? Just who she is? No. You appreciate that you are physically attracted to her. That's God-given. He put that drive in man. And I would tell you, men understand that. That's in Proverbs chapter 5, verse 19. It says, as a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. That is very much a part of the relationship of a husband and a wife. Wives would never think that my husband feels disrespected because I am not as involved in the physical relationship as him. But I would tell you, men feel very disrespected. They feel, what is it about me? I would tell you, women fight the same battle. How many people in here saw the movie Fireproof? We did a whole marriage retreat off of that movie, which had just had some great lessons. Good. The acting wasn't the greatest. Anybody saw it understands. The acting wasn't the greatest, but the story was fantastic. There were some great lessons in that movie. But I remember on one occasion, the man was tied up in pornography. And those that listened to the CD that I left for the Affair Proofing Your Marriage, we deal with that side of the equation. But I remember one thing that she said. His wife said to him in the movie, what is it about me that makes you want to do that? Now, I got to tell you, most men that are involved in pornography, and it's way beyond what you could possibly imagine. I'm talking about even amongst the Lord's people. Way beyond. It is incredible the amount of Christians that are involved in pornography, and we just don't know it. It's one of those secret kind of sins. And she asked that question, what is it about me? I'll tell you, most men who are involved in pornography say, it is not something about my wife that makes me want to do this. They don't think in those kind of terms, But she understands, if you were satisfied with me, you wouldn't do that. Isn't that, women, is that not the way you would think? If your husband was involved in pornography, wouldn't you think, if I was satisfying you, would you possibly, why would you have any reason? That's the way you think. What is it about me? I tell you, men who are not fulfilled the way they seek to be fulfilled within the sexual relationship are thinking exactly the same thing. Why is it she doesn't want to be with me? Women would never say, it's that I don't want to be with you. There's always a reasoning process. I can assure you as a husband, every time I'm not wanting to jump up and do what my wife wants to do, there's a reason in my mind. Every time she wants to have a conversation, I'm never thinking, you know what, I just don't want to talk to you. I've always got a reason in my mind why I don't want to have the conversation. Why? So is conversation her greatest need? No, it's indicative of her greatest need, which is love. Is the sexual relationship man's greatest need? No, it is indicative of his greatest need, which is respect, and it is a fulfillment of that relationship. And so we don't understand why God created us that way, but he did, and there's some things that you need to think about. And I used to have this read differently, and I'm not going to tell you what I had it read because I like it better this way. It is his need, it is your privilege. Your privilege. 1 Corinthians 7 says, you know what? When you get married, here's something you need to understand. Your body doesn't belong to you. It just doesn't. It belongs to him. His belongs to you, but yours belongs to him. That's the nature of marriage. Your body is for his fulfillment. His is for your fulfillment because both of us are thinking of the other person and giving sacrificially that way. And so we need to understand, you know what? It is a privilege that God allows me to be satisfactory to my husband this way. And why do I submit myself to him physically? It is because it means so much to him. It isn't because I have the same drive, but I should have the same interest. And so I joked earlier about the conversation that I had with Judy about the pedicure last night. I thoroughly enjoyed that whole conversation. Not because the pedicure meant something to me, but because Judy meant something to me. And so I can have absolute enjoyment in the conversation, though it's not necessarily what I would have chosen to talk about. That's not the issue. A woman needs to understand, though she doesn't have the same drive, God's not telling you you need to have the same drive. He didn't create you the same way. What he's telling you is, though, you need to have a relationship that demonstrates to your husband that you want to be with him intimately because you know it is what he needs and you consider it your privilege to be able to fulfill him that way. I think that's what God tells us. It's interesting to me that before marriage, Satan does everything he can to get unmarried people in bed together. Would you agree with that? Man, he'll provide provision and opportunity and mindsets, and he'll do everything he can. Interesting to me that it seems like after marriage, Satan's going to do everything he can to kick people out of bed. He's going to do it because he knows it is a major source of issues in marriage. What we need to do is make sure we're kicking Satan out of the bedroom, make sure that we're doing the way that we should. Do not neglect him. Do not neglect. You have to understand, it is a need. I want you to envision this. Judy loves to just sit down and talk, and I've talked about that. I mean, men, that's not our strong suit. We don't want to necessarily just sit down and have long conversations, but she loves to just sit down and talk. And it can be about anything, and she doesn't really care about what it's about. The fact that we're talking is what matters. I want you to envision, what would happen if I just refused to speak to my wife for, let's say, 3 weeks? What would that do to her? How would you view that? Would you not say, wow, seriously, you've refused to speak to your wife for 3 weeks? How unloving could you be? Wouldn't you think that of me, that I refused to speak? And yet, if a wife is not with her husband physically for 3 weeks, nobody throws onto the table and says, that is the most disrespectful thing I have ever heard of. How could you refuse? But it is exactly that way. Not because it is his greatest need, it is indicative of his greatest need. We need to make sure that we recognize that. Look at a couple of these quotes from men. I thought these were so good because sometimes, and I'll tell you what it used to say on there so that you'll understand these quotes. It used to not say that it was your privilege, it said it's your duty. I changed it. I don't like that, and I don't think that's necessarily the way God approaches that. And the problem with duty is somebody feels like, well, I'll just fulfill it. I don't have to be involved in it. I'll just fulfill it. I don't have to be emotionally involved. Not true at all about the physical relationship. And sometimes women think as long as my man or my husband is fulfilled physically, then he has gotten what he's looking for. That's not true. Men want their wives to want to be with them physically as much as they want to be with their wife physically. And look at some of the things that men have said. It becomes absolutely critical to his feeling desired. It says, I wish that my wife understood that making a priority of meeting my intimacy needs is the loudest and clearest way she can say, you are more important to me than anything else in the world. Now think about that. I mean, all the man is saying is, I wish she would understand that if she would make that a priority, that she would see how important that was and how much that showed my value to her. The same man went on to say, it's a form of communication that speaks more forcefully with less room for misinterpretation than any other. There's no question. When the wife initiates the intimacy side and demonstrates to husband, I want to be with you physically, it says worlds to him. It is incredible that it is a release for man. I would never excuse a man for getting involved in something he shouldn't get involved in, like pornography or like an extramarital affair. But I can assure all women this, men will find sexual release, period. You can just accept that. They're going to find sexual release. How they find it, to a great extent, depends upon their wives as well. I'm not saying that she's to blame. Please don't misunderstand me. If he makes those choices, he's to blame for what he's done. But don't think that that's not involved. Men will find release. They'll seek release because God has created us and to have that drive in us. You can't just ignore the drive. One man said it this way as he talks about his wanting or his need to be desired. Says, she doesn't understand how even her occasional dismissals make me feel less desirable. I can't resist her. I wish that I too were irresistible. She says that I am. I love this part of this quote. This man says it as well as any of us could. She says that I am, but her ability to say no so easily makes it hard to believe. Think about that. She's telling him how much she loves him and how irresistible he is, but her ability to not get involved sexually, he's saying, it just makes me question it. I know she says that I am. You know, it's kind of like the husband who's telling his wife, I really do. I love you with all my heart. No, I'm not going to talk to you, but I really do love you. I'm not going to go there with you, but I really do love you. Sooner or later, she's going to say, I'm having trouble believing the words because the actions aren't following through. Women need to understand. Men are going to ask those questions in life. The wives can demonstrate respect to their husbands by demonstrating all of those things. It becomes very much a microcosm of the marriage, as we said. Appreciate so much your attention. I hope that if you have any questions about anything or anything of that type, you can bring that. Feel free to bring that up as well. Be happy to discuss any of that with you. And then we'll get a chance, Lord willing, to talk a little bit more tomorrow about some of the commitments we made and how we're going to achieve those things within the relationship.